So the question tonight really is this: what does it take to get you to pray? What does it get to take you to cry out to God? What does it take to get you to truly call on the name of the Lord and pray to Him? Jonah has a testimony. As you know, many of the examples in Scriptures are the extreme, and so Jonah is the extreme. He's going to be the extreme of what it takes to get somebody to pray and to call to God and look to God. And as you read this, you're going to sense that part of it, what we're impressed with as we read his testimony, is what happened to him. But that's not what's impressive to him. And so you got to read the lines carefully, and you recognize he's not trying to communicate, oh, be impressed with what I did. Be impressed with what happened to me. Be impressed with where I was. Don't be impressed with me at all. All of it is about God. And that's who he is impressed with. As you read it, you read in verse 17 of chapter 1, "Now the Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow Jonah, and immediately he is saying to you and me, you'll never believe what happened to me. I was on this boat. I was running from God. I was running away from what God wanted me to do. God had said to me, go. I had said to him, no. I had no respect for the call of God in my life. I had no respect for the command of God in my life. I had no respect from that. What I wanted to do was flee from the presence of God. And they threw me overboard, and the sea calmed down, and you'll never believe what happened." What you and I will be impressed with is the reality of the predicament that Jonah was in. He was thrown overboard, and the Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow him. That somehow he found himself in the midst of a great fish, and we just are so overwhelmed with that. So we're so amazed at that an individual would be caught somehow in the belly of a whale. What impresses us is the reality that he didn't drown. Jonah, if he were here tonight, would be saying to you, "I bet you thought I was going to die, didn't you? I bet you thought that I had no hope. I bet you thought I was going to be on my own. I bet you thought God says, this guy's so bad, throw him over because I want to kill him." But I want to tell you something about my God. This is not a message about me, Jonah. It's about my God. My God had a purpose in what he was doing in my life. And my God had prepared a great fish. Just like later on he will appoint and prepare a gourd and a tree and a worm, and he can prepare winds and he can prepare worms and he can prepare anything he wants. My God stepped into my life. You are impressed with my predicament. I am impressed with my God's preparation. He had a plan for me. He had something he wanted to happen to me. He didn't let me die. My God was concerned that I would not die. And my God had a provision and a preparation for me, and it was a great, great fish. And that fish swallowed me, and it took me into its belly. You're impressed with my predicament. I'm impressed that God's long hand reached into my life, and He prepared a fish to swallow me. And you'll never believe, Jonah would say to you and me, what I then did. You know what I did? I sat in that fish 3 days and 3 nights. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking about slime. You're thinking about darkness. You're thinking about gastric juices eating away my flesh. You're talking and thinking about all the things that are happening to me in that fish. I want to tell you something. I was impressed with God's patience. For 3 days and 3 nights, I sat in the belly of that whale, and I refused to budge. I refused to break. I refuse to bend. Many of you have had kids, and sometimes when a kid gets a certain age, you know, there's this battle between dad and kid. And the young boy says, "You know, Dad, you're not going to beat me today." And the dad says, "Today we're going to beat you." And the young boy says, "You're not going to knock me down." And you say, "Son, go sit in that corner." And that son sits there with all the defiance that he can have. And even though he's sitting there because his dad is bigger than him, you know you haven't broken him. You know you haven't knocked him down. Jonah says, for 3 days and 3 nights, I procrastinated. I did nothing. I sat there. And you're impressed with my procrastination. But I'm impressed with a God who is that patient. He watched me go, and he wouldn't let go. He saw me into a fish. He made sure that fish was at the right place at the right time and swallowed me, because he had a plan for my life. And then when I sat there refusing to bend and break and pray and go to Him, He waited me out. Now, this is so impressive to people. It is so amazing to people that many people really can't believe. And this is a part of Jonah that most people cannot believe. And so we've done all kinds of gymnastics to try to make it believable. You understand that some people, I love this one, they come up with the idea, though it really happened, he got thrown in the water, this big fish kind of was bumping at him and pushing him along and pushed him all the way to shore. It was such a traumatic experience. He got out on the shore, he ran up, and there was this inn. It was called the Fish, the Great Fish Inn. And for 3 days and three nights, he had to stay in the Great Fish Inn and recover from this big fish that was pushing him along the surface of the water. Now, that one makes a lot of sense to me. And some people have to explain it that way. Some people say it's just figurative. You know, a lot of conservatives try very, very hard to prove that it could happen. They try to prove that this is a feasible thing. And when the critics say to us, "Oh, you can't believe the Bible," and you say, "I do believe the Bible," say, "How do you believe the Bible?" And when there's a story about Jonah, a man in the belly of a whale for 3 days and three nights, you say, "Hey, let me tell you about that. I got the evidence to prove that can happen." This is from Mystic Seaport Museum. Anybody been to Mystic, Connecticut, where they recreated that seaport and the Whaling Museum of the World is there, and on it goes? At the Mystic Seaport Museum, they have the record, and I'll just read a little bit about it. This is entitled, "The Man Who Lived in a Whale, and His Name Was Not Jonah." The year was 1891, the month was February. The ship, the Star of the East, was cruising near the far southern Falkland Islands, and it was a great whaling ship. She was after sperm whale, the whales of the day that were being harpooned, etc., etc. And the story goes on how they saw a whale 3 miles off. The boats got out. They went after him. And one of the men, by the names of seaman James Bartley, was one of the first men, and he was the first to throw a harpoon into that whale. And it wasn't uncommon in those days when the first man threw a harpoon in a whale. The whale didn't particularly like it, and they were huge, and you were close, and so the whale would move, and it was very common for whalers to get killed. Either just to drown, for that tail to come up, smash their little boats, and smash them to pieces. And often, whales swallowed or chewed those seamen and killed them. And this whale got harpooned by seaman James Bartley, and it moved like crazy. His boat went flying. He got thrown over. What the people didn't know, he got swallowed by the whale. As they went on, they eventually captured that whale, killed that whale, drew it next to the ship, and they started cutting it up to take the tallow or the fat and make oil into it. And that's a several-day process. And so they were going at it and going at it and going at it, and they got done with one day. They went to bed, came back the next day, and they were involved in it, and suddenly they got down to where the belly was, and they noticed that it was moving. And so they thought it was another fish or something in there. But anyway, they eventually, after a few more hours, they pulled that belly up and were going to process that belly, and to their surprise, they opened it up, and James Bartley was there. He was alive, but he was unconscious. The gastric juices of that whale had so eaten up his face and skin that it was hard to recognize. He had been so long in the dark and in that unconscious state that it says he was like a lunatic. And for 2 weeks, they just watched him. They had him locked in a room. He was behaving as a lunatic. They didn't know if he was going to live, but eventually he survived. And therefore, when people attack us and say, "You can't believe the Bible because there's a story about a man by the name of Jonah who was in the belly of the whale," a lot of us conservatives think that what we have to do is prove to you that it can happen and you can live and it could have been true. And so we go to Mystic Seaport, or we go to Institution of Creation Research, or I could go to some other places. In 1912, the Smithsonian Institute captured a whale off the Knight's Key down in Florida. It was 45 foot long, had a 38-inch throat, and it had a 1,500-pound black fish in its stomach, which is used by some to prove that a whale that large can indeed swallow a 1,500-pound great fish, so surely it could swallow whole a man. Some people would use the story of 1945. A scientist by the name of Eugene Geiling of Chicago crawled into a dead whale. That'd be a fun thing to do, to just show that you could get through the throat. The throats are usually very, very large. In fact, one of the great whaling captains in these reports says a whale can easily swallow an 8-foot-long and relatively large diameter object, a fish or whatever it is. And so this scientist from Chicago, Eugene Geiling, crawled into a dead whale, and he came out and he said, "It's really slimy, but there's enough room for me." And therefore, his was proof. And there are some who belittle the story. There are some who come up with new stories. There are some who say, "I can prove to you that it can happen." There are some who say it's a type of reality. It really never happened, but it's a type of what was going to happen with the Lord Jesus Christ. And then there are those who simply say, "It was a miracle. It just happened. And I have no scientific proof whatsoever of how it happened. I don't know how he survived in there for 3 days. I don't know what it was like to be inside there. All I know is this. God prepared a great fish that would come up. And that fish was so prepared that it could take in a man. That man could survive for 3 days. And in those 3 days, he could think, he could write, he could process thoughts, and he could write this wonderful poem, even if he couldn't write it with his pencil and paper, that at the end of the day, I don't have to prove to you anything. It's just a matter-of-fact miracle of God that He prepared the impossible for Jonah. That God was so concerned with a man and his salvation that He pulled off a miracle. That it took a miracle to save Jonah, and God did it. Jonah says, "You're impressed with my predicament. I'm impressed with God's preparation. He'd specifically make a great fish that could do that for me. You're impressed with my procrastination, that for 3 days and three nights I refused to submit and break and bend. I'm impressed with God's patience. And therefore, Jonah would say to you and me this day, that's why I wrote this great poem. It's found in Jonah chapter 2, and it's been a classic. Although, as you read it, you just have a sense that I can't figure out what's really going on. Is he talking about a real thing that happened in his life when he goes to the belly of Sheol? Or is that figurative language for something else and the bars of the earth closed in forever? And what's that all about? Is that the ribs of the whale?" And on and on. And so we have struggled with all that, but I just encourage you to read it. And just read it simply, naturally, and see if you can pick up what he's trying to get across. So this is what happened to me, to the glory of God. Chapter 2, verse 1, Jonah prayed to the Lord from the fish's belly. He was very conscious of what was going on. He was very aware of what was going on, and he ultimately cried to God. But you know, that's just a summary statement. Here's really how it happened. And Jonah would tell you this story. "You know, I cried out to the Lord because of my affliction, and He answered me." I want you to know that right from the start. I want to give you the bottom line before I even begin it. I want you to know where it's going to end. But I want you to know that when I got swallowed by that whale, that's not what I did. That's the bottom line after 3 days and three nights. Here's what really happened and how I got there. Verse 2. "Out of the belly of Sheol, I cried, and you heard my voice." Now, that little phrase, belly of Sheol, especially if you read it in Isaiah chapter 5, and I think it's verse 14, would give you a sense. Sheol is the place of the dead, and in particular, it's the place of the wicked dead. It's the place that when you get there, there's no turning back, and you can't turn around, and you can't get resurrected other than at the end in the judgment of Christ. And once you're there, you're stuck in Sheol. And from the belly of Sheol, that's where I cried out. And again, he says, "I want to tell you the bottom line. That's when I prayed and I turned to God, and that's when He heard me." Verse 3. "You cast me," we're going to start at the beginning, "You cast me into the deep, into the heart of the sea, and the flood surrounded me, and your billows and your waves passed over me." The truth is, this is what happened. It wasn't those sailors who threw me into the sea, although the sailors threw me into the sea. That God had orchestrated everything that had happened in my life, so that in one sense there was a wind, and in one sense it was God. In one sense there were sailors, in one sense I came to understand it was God who lifted me up and threw me out into that sea. It was God who had prepared a whale, a great fish for me. It was God who was doing everything for me. He cast me out there. He had a purpose in what He was doing. If He was so upset with me that He wanted to kill me, He would have killed me. But He didn't want to kill me. If He wanted to save me, He didn't need a whale to save me. If he wanted to save me, all you do is shut down the wind. He had a purpose in between there. He wasn't trying to save me, and he wasn't trying to kill me. He was trying to do something else in my life. Do you understand what he was trying to do? I hope you do, Jonah would say to you and to me. You cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas. The floods surrounded me. All your billows, your waves passed over me. And I said, I have been cast out of your sight. See, I came to the point of making this conclusion. I wanted to flee from the presence of God. Do you remember that? And God says, are you sure about that? You really want to get away from me? You want to flee from my presence? Watch me. I can pull that one off. I can answer your prayer. I can do what you want. And I found myself cast into the sea, waves flying over me, everything turning around all over me, and I finally concluded, I've been cast out of his sight. That might be, in a sense, a word of repentance, but I don't think it was. It was a word of arrogance. I wanted to get away from God, and I got away from God. I said I would rather die than go to Nineveh, and I'm going to get my wish. I'm away from the presence of God. And then he said this, verse 4, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. You might think he had come to the end of his rope, but he has not. All the waves and wind and billows and all that going over him, he's cast out of the sight of God. And then he says, yet, you know what's true? Someday I'm going to see that temple again. That is sheer arrogance. God won't really destroy me. I don't really have to pray to God. I don't really have to do anything about this. If Jonah were here tonight, he would say to you and me, you ever live like that? Your whole world comes crashing in on you and down on you, and you say, you know, God's going to take care of me. I don't have to turn to him. I don't pray to him. I don't run to him. I don't have to plead with him. I don't call to him. You know, any day I want, I can just walk over and look at his holy temple. See, I found myself in a spot that most people have never found themselves in the belly of a whale for 3 days and 3 nights with the winds and the waves and the billows and all that rushing around me, and I could hear it out there. And I had the audacity to say, I'm getting out of here. I'm going to see his holy temple once more. I'm going to make this. I'm going to survive. You see, if Jonah were here today, he would say, I still wasn't broken. I still didn't break. I still didn't bend. You know what God then did to me? Here's what he did. Verse 5, the waters surrounded me even to my soul. The deep closed around me. Weeds were wrapped around my head. I mean, it isn't getting better. It's getting worse and worse and worse. God wanted to kill me. He could do that. God wanted to save me. He could do that. God's trying to get my attention. God's trying to break me. And living in the belly of a whale wasn't doing that. Not the first day. Not the second day. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. So the water surrounded me, even to my breath. So I got to the point where I was just trying to survive. Just trying to breathe. I was just trying to stay alive. The deep closed around me. The pressures were increasing. The weeds were wrapped around my head. Life was getting worse and worse and worse. I went down to the moorings of the mountains. This fish took me down to the bottom, to the very foundations of the mountains, to as deep as you can go. The earth with its bars closed behind me forever. I'd come to the point where I suddenly thought, this is it. I really am going to die. And the bars of the earth are going to close around me and go, I'm going to be locked in. And forever, I will be separated from the presence of God. forever I'll be separated from what God has promised to me as His child. I had said to God one day, I want to flee from your presence. And God says, okay, we'll see if you like it when you get there. And God took me to the very edge of being away from His presence. So that I had come to the conclusion, it's all over. Later on in verse 7 it says this, when my soul fainted within me, I saw my life slipping away from me. And what Jonah would say to you and to me is this, as I tell you this story, Jonah speaking, I want you to see what it took for me to break. I want you to see what it took for me to come to the end of my ropes. I want you to see what a tough nut I was to crack. God had to send a great fish, had to put me inside it. I didn't cry out to Him. We went through the waves and the billows and all that, and I said, you know, someday I'm going to see God's holy temple. God says, okay, we'll go a little deeper. We're going to take you a little further until you're fighting for breath. You're pressured in. Weeds all around your head. You're at the bottom of the sea. And you have this one conclusion. Now it's all over. And my soul fainted within me. I had come to the end of myself. I want you to know, Jonah says, what it took for me to see the severity of my trouble. What it took for me to cry out to my God. What it took for me to break and bend and turn to Him. Because verse 7 of chapter 2 says, when my soul finally fainted within me, then I remembered the Lord, and my prayer went up to you in your holy temple. It was not until he had come to the end of himself that suddenly he gives us this testimony, and then I turned to you. Jonah is saying to you and to me, I want you to know what it took. It took 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of a whale before I saw the severity of my trouble. My life was crashing in on me. Everybody else would have said, why don't you call out to God? But I wasn't calling out to God. I was confident I was getting out of this one. And He brought me down until I finally did. It took me 3 days and 3 nights to see the severity of my trouble. And it took me 3 days and 3 nights to see the solution to my trouble. And that solution was found in my Lord. That's why when he had started at the beginning of his poem in verse 2, I cried out to the Lord and because of my affliction, and He answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. So there are introductory statements, and now He's trying to communicate to you and to me, you'll never believe what it took to break me and for me to see the severity of my trouble. But God, you know what? God didn't quit working with me. He kept working with me until I finally came to the point of breaking. Do you understand what He's saying to you? Our God is capable of convicting us and convincing us when He wants to. If you want to be broke, He can break you. It might not be pretty. You might be tough. You might be strong. But He can bring you to the end of your rope and He can break you. And Jonah says, I suddenly saw the severity of my trouble and I turned to Him and I suddenly saw the solution to my trouble was completely and only in Him. And so in verse 7 he goes on to say, and I remember the Lord and my prayer went up to you in your holy temple. Now all of a sudden I'm running to God. Now all of a sudden I say, my breath is, I just can't get it anymore. The pressure's on me. I'm slipping away and I run to God. And that's when I pray to God. And he says, my testimony to you is this. Verse 8 and 9. Those who regard worthless idols forsake their own mercy. But I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay what I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. I want you to know that when I finally got done with that and finally God had broken me and I finally ran to Him and I cried out to Him and I prayed to Him, I came to this conclusion. Those who regard worthless idols, those who run to any other gods than our God, will forsake their own mercy. They will be people who will be sadly disappointed. They will be people who are trusting in all the wrong things. They are trusting in their gods or their own works or whatever it is, and there will come a day when they will find that they are worthless idols. They are useless in their lives. And they will forsake their own mercy. The opportunity they have is what they let slip away, because the only mercy they can find is the mercy they find in God. So I want you to know that this is what I learned. Your only solution for life is to run to God. The only salvation you can possibly have is found in the God that I found that day in the belly of the whale. When you read on in verse 9, it says, "But I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay what I have vowed." You know that that's a play on what had happened in chapter 1. Remember in chapter 1, all those pagan sailors who are crying out to their worthless idol gods, all those pagan sailors who are trying to do whatever they could to appease the gods of the universe as they understood them, and finally they were willing to sacrifice and make vows and do all of those things. Jonah's fast asleep. Jonah really doesn't care. Jonah's just kind of living it up. Finally, at the end, they finally turn to the real God, those pagan sailors, and they make sacrifices to the true and living God, and they make vows to the true and living God, but Jonah hasn't done it. There's no way he's going to do it. And Jonah says, "But I want you to know, God was intent on breaking me, and He did it. And at the end, I came to realize, I will sacrifice to my God. I will pay all of my vows to my God, because I've come to realize this: salvation is of the Lord. There is only one who you can run to. There is only one who can save you. There is only one that can extend to you mercy. And all the worthless idols and all the worthless works that you think you're going to run to, abandon them early. Don't be like me. It took me 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of a whale before I broke, before life was slipping away, before I would break. And I want you to know it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way for you. Your only hope is to run to the eternal God, and you'll never believe what happened. The minute I cried out to God, you'll never believe what happened. The God who had prepared this great fish with a gullet big enough to take care of me so I could live and think and move. A miracle. God pulled off a miracle for me that day. And then when I finally, after 3 days and 3 nights, cried out to Him, He right away took that fish to the shore and He vomited me up on the shore. And I was saved. God heard my prayer. God responded to my prayer. And the minute I prayed, the minute I cried, the minute I called out to Him, He immediately took care of my need and preserved my life. You see, if Jonah were here today, he would say, "You might be impressed with my predicament. I was in a bad spot. You might be impressed with my procrastination. 3 days and three nights. What are you doing, Jonah? When are you going to get this? You might be impressed with my hard heart. I refuse to break. No way for me. I'm going to see His holy temple. I'm all right. I'm still not bad." You might be impressed with my life. But I want to tell you, I'm impressed with my God. My God did not abandon me in the moment of my need. My God sent a great storm so that I'd get thrown overboard. And He prepared a great fish so I'd get swallowed. He brought that fish around through the billows of the sea and brought weeds over me and brought me to the depths of the mountains. He took that fish all over the place until finally my God had convinced me that I was without hope and without help until I turned to Him. And in mercy, my God immediately took care of me. Jonah would say to you and me, "I hope you understand what I've come to know. My God is so concerned with my salvation that He does a miracle to make sure it happens in my life. My God was so concerned with my service for Him that He did a miracle to get me where He wanted me to go. My God is concerned with me. My God is concerned with my salvation. My God is concerned with my service. My God is concerned with my life. In fact, you remember I skipped a little bit of chapter 2 and verse 6. Did you quickly pick that up? There's something out of sync there, it seems like, and so I jumped right over it. But it is not out of sync, because it's perfectly in sync. Did you read verse 6? He says, I went down to the moorings of the mountains, the earth with its bars closed behind me forever. I went right away to verse 7. When my soul fainted within me, I remember the Lord. That would be a logical progression. And it just went down and down and down. But I missed the last half of verse 6. And it's before the first half of verse 7. Do you know what it says in the last half of verse 6? Yet you have brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. Do you know who initiated the salvation of Jonah? It wasn't Jonah. It was God. Do you know who took the first step? It was God. Do you know who showed mercy even before Jonah cried out for pity? It was God. Jonah, in his careful wording of this poem, wants you and me to recognize salvation is of the Lord. It's completely of Him. He would want you and me to recognize 'tis mercy all, immense and free. And oh my God, it found out me. Now, I suspect most of us are sitting here tonight and going, wow, that guy is tough. That guy is bad. I suspect he is. And I suspect God does what He always does. He uses the worst examples or the great examples, the extreme examples, to say this. I found a guy who was as tough as nails when it came to repentance. He was tough to convince that he needed to cry out to me. But God would say to you and to me, but I can break him. Because my mercy is intense. And he was mine. And I wanted him. And I did what it took. God would say to you and to me, whatever is true in your life, you're not as bad as Jonah. And don't make it as bad as Jonah. I think Jonah would say to you and me some other things like this. Is your life crashing in on you? Choking you off? It's not going real well? Don't be like me. My life was really in desperate situation. I was in the belly of a whale. It was crashing in like crazy. And I said, yeah, I'm going to see His holy mountain. I'll be all right. I'll survive this. I'm going to make it. Jonah would say to you and to me, if your life is crashing in, why don't you run to God right now? Why don't you cry out to God right now? It may be that God's trying to get your attention through the events of your life that are not going so well, so that you would turn to Him and find that He is the one who can provide all that you need. 'Tis mercy all, immense and free. And oh my God, it found out me.